want to be a lead magnet? It starts with using better words on your website. Hey, I'm Liz Teresa, and I'm here to tell you that improving your copy is the absolute easiest, quickest, and most cost-effective way to get more clients and cash rolling in. Go to freecopyvideo.com to download my free copywriting training. See you there. Hello, and welcome to the Liz on Biz podcast, where the guests are barely prepped and I'm barely ready. I'm your host, Liz Teresa, and I help you launch and build online businesses you love. This podcast is all about entrepreneurship, and I hope you like it. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Liz on Biz. Here with me today is one of my biz BFFs and one of my all-time favorite clients. Her name is Kayla Sloan. Kayla is an online business expert. She helps entrepreneurs like you who feel chained by your finances bet on yourselves. At KaylaSloan.com, it's all about making your work life something you truly, truly love. Kayla is also the founder of 10KVA, her flagship program, where she teaches you how to make a consistent $10,000 a month as a virtual assistant. Welcome to the show, Kayla.
Thanks so much for having me, Liz. I'm really excited to be here and chat with you.
I'm excited, and welcome to Liz on Biz, which I just realized, I don't know why, it made me realize I don't say the name of my show that much, like during the show.
You should. It's like a bomb name.
And like, isn't it kind of like when you're watching a movie and then they say the name of the movie and you're like, yeah.
I know. And I was actually thinking the other day about, you know, potentially getting back into podcasting, but I thought my name doesn't rhyme with anything cool like Liz's.
Kayla Layla. I don't know. Kayla La. Oh, wow. Wouldn't that be so cute if it was like, ooh la la, Kayla La, like if you still did fashion?
Ooh. Yeah, that would be fun.
Kayla La fashion. Oh, so tell me. See, I know about you, so people listening are like, what's she talking about? But what I love to have people do when they first come to the show is to tell me your story. So where did this all come from for you?
I have to really think back to this one because it's been a few years now. So I got started in December 2013, which, wow. Yeah, a little over 4 years ago.
That's when I got married one time.
Yeah. Been there, done that, right?
Been there, done that. Yeah. No, continue. Yeah. Please continue.
Oh, no, you're good. So I was like in this really dark place with my life and my finances, and I was feeling very stressed out and my job was not creatively fulfilling. And I really wanted to work in journalism and communications, but it didn't really end up happening. And I ended up being a number cruncher, actually, like as a credit analyst. So the only thing I got to create was like a narrative about whether or not someone qualified for a loan, which is like not exciting.
It sounds so sad. What a sad narrative.
I know. And so I would, you know, come home and I just would sit in front of the TV for hours, you know, like, oh, this is what my life is, but there's got to be something else because I'm just not happy with this, you know? And at the same time, like I had graduated college, my student loans were coming due, I took out a mortgage, so I have all these bills piling up and I was like, oh my gosh, my life is a disaster. And in the middle of the night, one night when I wasn't asleep because I was super stressed out, I Googled something about like how to get out of debt. And I found the world of personal finance blogs. And so I just started reading and reading and reading. And then eventually I was like, I think I'm going to start my own personal finance blog to kind of share my journey out of debt. And I did this anonymously in December 2013. I started my blog. It was called Shoeaholic No More because I wanted to talk about, you know, how my finances became a disaster because I bought so many clothes and shoes and all of those type of things and really get a handle on that aspect of my life. You know, that whole like clutter and like need to declutter and simplify and also improve my finances. And so that's really where I got my start. And I had absolutely no idea that fast forward a couple of years, I'd be doing this as a business.
Wow. That, I mean, if you think about it, what I like to tell people in the online business world is that your job, you didn't know that this would be what you did because it like frankly didn't exist. When you think of people that used to like, you know, like when people say when I grow up, I'm going to be blah. Like for us, when we grew up, this wasn't a thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, when I started, it was just supposed to be a creatively fulfilling hobby. And it was at first until I landed my first freelance writing client. And she was like, "Hey, I love your voice. I love your style. Do you want to come write for me?" And I was like, "Wait, you're going to pay me to write about money? Like, I don't even know anything about money. That's why I started this blog, because I don't know anything about money."
And so what did she have? Did she have like another personal finance website?
She did. Yes. She was looking for somebody to contribute and share, you know, another perspective on finance. And so I was like, well, I like to write, so I guess I'll just figure out the rest, you know?
I love that attitude. And I mean, I kind of feel like this whole, that whole self-reliance and the knowing that you can just figure it out. I mean, one time I went to an audition and I got the best piece of advice. They always said, say yes to everything, like on a job application. I mean, I would say mostly, like within reason.
But right,
like say
right.
yes to everything. Like in an audition, for example, I had a form I had to fill out and it was like, do you know how to dance? And I was like, oh my gosh, like I could sing pretty well. Like, okay, right? I was a better actor than I was anything, but I could sing. I was not a good dancer, at least by my standards, unless you meant like going to like a mixer or the club right. with my friends. And then I passed in that I like absolutely couldn't dance. And I was actually cast as the lead role in a play all about dancing, not even making it up. And they said it was because, like, he said that when he saw I said I couldn't dance, he said, you should never say you can't do something, because in like, especially in the entertainment world, just say you can and learn how. And I kind of feel like entrepreneurship, there's a huge parallel with that.
Oh, totally. I definitely agree. You know, I was like, I know how to write. I just don't know how to write about money because, like, I don't know anything. But, you know, there's this whole world where I can Google it and figure it out. And you're going to pay me and I need extra money. So this works out.
And so that kind of, did that lead to more freelance writing opportunities, or how did your business evolve from there?
Yeah, it did. I got started with her and I thought that I wanted to be a freelance writer, because I saw these other bloggers like start to post like income reports and talk about how they were making all this money as a freelance writer on the side. And so in my head, that's what I wanted to do. And I got another freelance writing client, but then I was actually approached about a different opportunity, which was being a virtual assistant. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And she's like, well, I noticed that you're really like organized and, you know, good at keeping me on track, because I would like follow up and be like, hey, why isn't this published yet? You know, like, did you want me to do something different, or is there something else you, you know, need me to do to help you? And she was like, well, I mean, do you want to be a virtual assistant? And I was like, I don't know what that is. But anyway, she walked me through it. I had like the best first client ever, because she was very patient and like taught me a lot of skills that I used then to land other clients. And it just really got the ball rolling for me. I've built my whole business off of referrals.
So do you think that like you enjoy, what did you enjoy more? Did you find that you liked that more because it's more relationship oriented than writing?
I've really enjoyed having a mix of both. And to this day, I still do some freelance writing and some virtual assistant work. But by far, the virtual assistant side of things is a larger portion of my business. And I think it is because I do have that unique skill set where I don't want to say anybody can be a freelance writer. I mean, most people probably can if they have, you know, a good understanding of how to write, basically, is all you really need. But I've noticed that, at least in my community, there's a lot of freelance writers, but there's less people who have the skill sets or the background or interest in more of that project management type work.
And you like that.
I do.
So let me ask you this. I have this, because I think the word VA, right? So virtual assistant is also commonly called a VA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What do you make of the name virtual assistant as like a job title? Do you feel, and I ask you this because I've known a few VAs, and it's been my experience that sometimes like if somebody thinks that you're their VA, that like they can like boss you and like you work quote for them, like, but you don't work for your clients, you work with your clients, correct?
Correct.
Has that like, I don't know, would you call that like, I guess, yeah. Has that, like, word choice for that kind of job title, has that ever been, like, an issue for you? Like, have you ever noticed, like, people that are, like, rotten or don't understand how to treat people? Or they think, like, just because you're their assistant that they can be all Meryl Streep and Devil Wears Prada? Or has that not been a problem?
In general, it hasn't been a problem with most clients. Mm-hmm. But I would say there's definitely people out there who do have a lack of respect for people who call themselves a VA. And so there are times that I choose to use, you know, different terminology as far as, like, I might call myself a project manager. Technically, there is a very small difference between a virtual assistant and a project manager, where, you know, a project manager is basically going to oversee the day-to-day tasks, and a virtual assistant is actually going to complete the everyday tasks. So there is a little bit of a difference when you actually get into it, but it's very small.
Yeah, I feel like you do both, probably.
I do. And in general, you know, I don't have trouble with that, but there are clients out there who are going to treat you that way. And, you know, my advice is try to build your business to where you don't work with those people and you don't need to work with those people. You know, there's plenty of work out there. So if you find yourself working with someone who does treat you that way, you know, you need to be able to either set strict boundaries with them. And if they don't listen, you know, or respect those boundaries, then, you know, that needs to be the time where you just say, okay, this is not going to work for me, because nobody should be treated like that.
How soon do you think you know in a new client relationship that, like, this person isn't right for you? Or that they are, I guess.
Yeah, I typically know within, I would say, a couple of weeks, really. And it's such a, it feels, sometimes I feel guilty. I make myself feel guilty about this occasionally, where, you know, you go through this whole onboarding process and then you find out it doesn't work. And then I feel like, gosh, I wasted my time. I wasted their time. But it's actually more of a disservice to continue working with someone if it's not a good fit, because it just continues to waste your time and their time when you know that they could be better served by somebody else. And so I just really try to approach my client relationships with a service-oriented attitude. I don't ever go into something with dollar signs in my eyes. You know, I try to really find clients that I know I can serve well and that are a good fit for me too.
And I think that kind of last bit, and are a good fit for you too, it's kind of like, I feel like that, I think that's just as important.
Oh, definitely.
And I kind of feel like, I guess, could you share, I mean, this might even seem like an obvious question, but I think it's an interesting thing to talk about. But could you share, like, what are some indicators that somebody's not right for you? Like, when you're working with somebody, what are some red flags that come up?
I have had clients who are demanding in the sense that they'll send something at 7 p.m. at night and expect that it's done within the next hour. Like, they don't respect your office hours, or they try to get in touch with you outside of your preferred method of communication. You know, things that should be discussed in your onboarding process or even put in your contract. And if they try to go around those, you know, boundaries that you've set, that is a huge red flag that they're not going to respect you and they're not going to respect your time.
So yeah, how to set boundaries. This is a wicked good starting point. I said wicked good, so now everybody's like, oh, she's from Boston. I know. But that is it's a wicked good thing to talk about. I think it's something that is especially hard for anyone listening, whether they are thinking about becoming a VA or if they are in a service kind of based business, if you're a consultant or expert. How do you go about setting these boundaries? You kind of slipped in a really great tip, which I loved, is that you could include it in your service agreement.
Definitely.
And
yes.
Part of the onboarding. Can you speak to that?
Yes. I have taken a lot of time to reflect on my onboarding process since I got started. At the beginning, I had no, like, this is probably the wrong way to go about it, but I had no contract. I had no onboarding process at all. You know, when I landed my first client, it was kind of by chance. Like, we had emailed back and forth and she was like, hey, I need some help. And I was like, cool, pay me money, you know? And then, you know, from there, it really got to the point where as I started working with more and more clients, I realized the importance of these things where, you know, I can't work 24/7. I'm a human, just like everyone else. And so it's really important to set those boundaries, because I found that especially in the online world, there are people that work at weird times of the day or on the weekends and things like that. You know, if it's a side hustle for them and they do it after their day job or on the weekend, you know, they need to understand that just because they choose to work those hours doesn't mean that you, as their virtual assistant, have to work those same hours.
I love that. And I feel like that's something you could even say. I mean, nicely.
Yes.
If somebody wasn't respecting your boundaries, you could be like, right. I see that you're working, but not everyone else is.
Exactly. And I have a virtual assistant of my own. And that was something that in the beginning, she kind of went through because she was a new virtual assistant. I was her first client and she did the same thing, you know, and it's like, it was a repeat for me because I had done that. And so I knew, you know, in the beginning that I kind of coached her, to be honest, where it was like, I do work on the weekend sometimes on my own stuff, not on client work, but on my own stuff as a business owner. And just because I'm sending you an email on the weekend does not mean you have to respond. And in fact, I think you probably shouldn't respond because you teach your clients how to treat you from day one. And if you start out responding to those emails at 11 p.m. or on a Sunday afternoon or whatever, when they reach out to you, they're going to expect you to do that forever. They're going to expect you to respond within 5 minutes if that's what you've trained them to expect.
Let's just say, quote of the day, you teach your clients how to treat you day one. That is such a, let's say truth bomb. Can we say that? Or is that an Oprah-ism?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. I'm good with it.
I don't think maybe it's been trademarked. I don't mean to infringe, but dang. Right. Yeah. That couldn't be more true. So what I'd like to do, I want people, let's let that sink into your brain right now.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to ask you now is about this program that you have, and it's called 10KVA, which, by the way, what a wonderful rhyme that you came up with.
Thanks.
Where did that come? Is that like one of those things you thought of in the shower when you come up with a great name like that?
Oh, I usually do my best thinking in the shower or when I'm like laying in bed in the middle of the night and I like just wake up and it like, boom, it hit me.
I love the name. I would love for you to share a little bit about, like, I guess who the program is for and what kind of drew you to creating your online program.
Well, I started my business part-time. My first month I made $285 and I was so excited, but I knew that, you know, it could be something bigger. You know, I saw other people doing it. And so I thought, I'm going to give this a try. And now fast forward a couple of years, I'm earning over $10,000. And so I really want to help people because I know that there's work out there. You know, I'm approached by new clients very frequently and I can't say yes to all of them. So I have to refer them out to other people. But there's such a lack of virtual assistants who do high quality work that I want to pass them on to. So I started coaching people one-on-one and I love doing it. But then I thought, I think my time can be better served and reach more people by creating, you know, a self-paced course.
And so what do you cover in the course? Is it like partially, I ask because I'm thinking like when I first saw it, I was like, does it talk about like profitability more? But like, it sounds like you probably do get into customer relations and onboarding.
I do. Yeah. I cover that extensively in one of the modules. You know, I walk you through what you should do when you get your first client, how to onboard them, how to teach them how to treat you from day one, since you train your clients how to treat you. Mm. And I really go through the very beginning. You know, the very first module takes you through the, you know, kindergarten level, like what is a virtual assistant and what are you expected to do, but also what are you not expected to do?
Hmm.
You know? And so it's really about structuring your business as well as, you know, making a profit.
And I kind of think for entrepreneurs too, this is actually, I'm now gearing the question a little differently. If you're an entrepreneur, how do you know you need a VA? Like, what are some telltale signs? And how do you know you need a VA versus needing what I think VAs get confused with? I feel like VAs get confused with, like, project managers, like you suggested, as well as confused with online business managers, as well as confused with maybe web developers. Mm-hmm. So can you explain to people what's the difference between some of these terms that we hear thrown around?
Yeah, I think when you need a VA, here's some telltale signs, okay? You are stressed out. You can't get your to-do list done. You find small details slipping through the cracks. You know, I don't know if all business owners are perfectionists like me, but I definitely am. And when I noticed those things, you know, that's when I realized that I had to make changes, you know. And so even though I am a VA, I also have a VA, which gives me kind of a unique perspective, getting to be not only, you know, the virtual assistant for other people, but having a virtual assistant myself.
And I kind of feel like you need one, though. I mean, like, I feel like people listening could be like, she's a VA. Why, if she's a VA, why should she ever need a VA? She could just VA herself or something. Right. Like, so that's probably right. What people are listening. What made you hire one? Is it that you kind of hit that breaking point where you just couldn't take it anymore?
I did. I went beyond that breaking point and had like this whole like mental breakdown, like, oh, what am I doing with my life, you know? Mm. And I realized that I wasn't marketing my business how I should be. And to free up some of my time for those higher level tasks, I brought on a virtual assistant to do some of those, you know, daily activities, because we all know that consistency and those day-to-day activities are what make your business continue to flow smoothly. But at the same time, as a business owner, you can't get caught up in those things, because you have to also be able to have a higher level view of your business and where it's going in the future, you know, to stay on top of things that are happening and trends in your industry and things like that.
What are some of the daily tasks that a VA can do for you?
As a VA, I do lots of different things for my clients, including, you know, things from email management to social media. I do some light proofreading. I'm not a proofreader, but occasionally I'll help out, you know, with that if they don't have, you know, an actual proofreader on their team. Content scheduling, creating like a calendar to keep things on track. There's lots and lots of things that virtual assistants can do. And it really depends, you know, there's actually different types of virtual assistants too. So, you know, there's virtual assistants who are very general, who can do, you know, maybe a little bit of light bookkeeping, things like that. And then there's more specialized virtual assistants who might specialize in things like WordPress, where they take your blog posts, put them into WordPress, get them all scheduled, you know, formatted, all of those types of things too.
Interesting. You know, I never even considered that. So I kind of feel like if people are seeing these things, I even like when you said if you're feeling stressed, you said stressed, forgetful, and things are slipping through the cracks. I think if you are feeling that way, I mean, you might need a virtual assistant. And I think overall, you need to delegate more. I kind of think people, it's like you hit a ceiling, because I think that we always think, oh, well, you know, I know how to do this, so I should just do it myself.
Right.
Right? But, like, that's not realistic, because I think that that's not taking into account something that you pointed out, which is having that top-down view of your business. So looking at the bigger picture, like, where is this going? And I guess, yeah, how do you find the time to do that for yourself? Is that something that you still struggle with?
It is. It is a struggle for me. You know, I love working with my clients and I really enjoy what I do. And it also is my main source of income to pay my bills. And so it can be a struggle sometimes to find that balance between completing my client work and also taking the time to work on my own brand and my own business as well.
So how do you get clients? Let's talk about getting clients for a second. You said that this is not a problem for you, and I think that's awesome. So great job. I think that that's like gold star of the day. That's great. Because like that's a thing that people – I hear from people all the time is, you know, how do I get more leads? How do I get more clients? How do I get more customers? When confronted with that question, I guess you would hear this probably from some of your students, is that like that would be a question that would come up, or it's probably something you cover. What are some ways that you suggest people go about that if they're just starting? So if they can't rely on referral marketing.
So if you can't rely on referrals, at least not yet, some of my first suggestions are to turn to things like Facebook groups, your existing network, if you know any business owners, if you have friends who have businesses, if you, you know, have any friends who are bloggers even, they might need help. Individual bloggers are starting to more and more hire a virtual assistant, which I think is a sign of the times, you know. People aren't just blogging for fun anymore. A lot of these people are blogging and making a profit, and so they do need a virtual assistant. So, you know, that favorite blog that you follow, reach out. Ask them if they need help, especially if you start noticing some of those signs of stress or things slipping through the cracks. You know, if they post life updates and say something like, oh, I'm so stressed, you know, ding, 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 reach out to them. Like,
yeah, look for
day.
Their signs of burnout.
Yes.
And that actually, that's a wicked good point, is that that means that they probably need you now more than ever.
Absolutely. And you don't have to be pushy. You don't have to feel like one of those pushy, slimy salespeople. No. You know, reach out and just genuinely say to them, hey, I noticed that you seem really burnt out. It seems like you might need some help. What can I do? Have you thought about having a virtual assistant?
Yeah, like just say you exist. I mean, sometimes exactly. That's all you got to do. And then people are like, thank freaking God you showed up. I can totally understand that. I want to ask you a really common question that I get from clients I see in general posted on Facebook, is the question of when to invest in your business and when to invest in hiring someone else. Sometimes I will have someone call me, let's say they just started a business, and this is like a super common thing. And they'll say, you know, I want to get some money in the door before I invest in hiring you as my website person, right? Or my web designer, my copywriter, however they're hiring me. And then they have this idea that they need to have the money coming directly from the business in the door, even if they have the cash on hand to do it, because of like the way that people assume money works in business. And I say assume because, I mean, I'm clearly giving my opinion here, is that you have to invest in your business. It, you know, the hole you invest through is the hole you receive through, which is a thing that I learned actually when I was working for a company called Holistic MBA. I used to work with a company called Holistic MBA, which I don't even know that they're – I don't think that they're still around, or if they are, they've rebranded and it's been many years. But that was the thing that like their lead coach said, is that the hole you invest through is the hole that you receive through. And so it's something that I really believe, is that you have to invest in a business for it to become profitable. That Amazon, for example, and Amazon's founder, right? Jeff Bezos, that's him, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, I should know this, but I feel like I'm on Jeopardy and I wasn't sure. But yeah, like for example, he's now richer than Bill Gates. His net worth has now surpassed Bill Gates very recently. And it's because Amazon was actually not profitable for many, many years. So he kept investing in his business because he believed that it was great enough that someday it would be ridiculously profitable. But like years into having Amazon Prime, like even like that, like I'm talking like into like the steady 2000s, Amazon was not profitable, and now he's worth more than Bill Gates. And so, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say, is I firmly believe that you have to invest in order to get anything back. So investing in an assistant is like, I mean, especially when time is money and you're a service-based entrepreneur or you're an expert.
Right.
What are you thinking not doing that? This is what I have to say first. Like, you are crazy town USA. But do you agree with me?
I do. You know, that's
after my
something...
long diatribe, I'm like, that was a question that really just let me talk for a while. But yeah,
that's okay. Yeah. No, I am on the same page. That's actually something I practice, you know, right or wrong. I leverage some of my income from client services that I provide to others to build my own brand. Mm. So my website itself is not my biggest source of revenue. You know, my brand itself is not my biggest source of revenue. It's coming from client services that I provide to others. However, I have taken a portion of my income from client services and invested it into my own brand and into my own, you know, website. You know, hiring you to do my website was paid for by the client services that I provide to others. But the reason that it's worked out is I can't say enough. I know that I didn't come on the show to brag about you, but here I am. So having you do my branding and my website, it was an investment into my business, and it has paid off because I have gotten more exposure. I have gotten higher level clients that pay more because they recognize that having, you know, my beautiful brand that I have now, thanks to Liz, has, you know, amplified my business.
Aw, see, you get every episode of Liz on Biz will now feature Kayla Sloan. No, but seriously, thank you. I really, that humbles me.
And yeah, and it's the same with my virtual assistant too. You know, the VA that I work with now is mostly paid for with revenue that I've earned from client services that I provide to others, which sounds kind of like, oh, you're just putting your money from being a VA into another VA. Well, yes, you know, you have to, of course, still look at profitability to where, like, I am earning more than I'm paying her, of course, mm-hmm. you know, as a business owner, that's part of it. But, you know, without that, I wouldn't be able to grow my business.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Do you ever find that when you're talking to somebody, like, let's say somebody emails you and they want to hire you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that it's a really common, like, point for people? Like, do you often hear that? Like, I hear it. I don't hear it that often. I mean, I hear it pretty often that it's worth mentioning. But, like, do people commonly say, I can't, you know, like, I want to hire an assistant. I know I need one, but oh, I don't have any money coming in. Like, that's a thing that people say, right?
Yes. Or they'll say, you know, they can't afford it at this time. And so when
that
happens.
What do you say to them? Yeah.
When that happens, you know, I do try to point out the worth of a VA. But on the other hand, if they still just really are cash strapped, I mean, I've been there. I bootstrapped my business for a long time. And if they're still at that point, I do try to refer them to someone else who might be closer to their price point. So as part of my course, I actually created a client connection service. And so I'll try to pass those leads on to some of my students who might be just starting out because their services are going to be a little cheaper. But I still know that they're going to provide a high quality, you know, service to their clients.
Wow. That so sounds like you kind of solved that with 10K VA.
I have tried my best because I know that, you know, students coming from my course are looking for a client. And if I have clients looking for a VA, but I'm not a good fit or I don't have the capacity, you know, making that connection has been really powerful.
And I think what's really important to point out is that it's not like you hear, oh, I can't afford that right now. And then all of a sudden you're 50% off. Like, you never do that.
Right.
Like, you're not like, oh, okay, then I will give you my kidney and 50% off if you
right.
accept me.
Right.
That's never, I mean, I think I want to make it clear to people listening that it's never a good idea. Like, actually, it's a Marie Forleo lesson. Like, she gives many lessons, obviously. But mm-hmm. Marie Forleo did a whole thing of Marie TV that was about never slash your prices and always add value instead. So if you're trying to close the deal, and like sometimes I'll close the deal with somebody and they really want something bad for free, like they want me to like be cheaper. I'll never be cheaper, but I might throw in something random for free. Like random.
I even practice that with my teammates or, you know, my team members, like my virtual assistant. She's amazing. She has grown so much as a VA, and I know that she charges a much higher rate to new clients. So as one of her first clients that does pay a little bit less, you know, I try to add value in other ways where, mm-hmm. you know, I might give her, you know, like a free coaching session with me, you know, to help her grow her business. Or, you know, I might purchase like training, and she has access to the training because she's using it for my business activities, you know, so she's getting paid to take training, but also not having to pay for the training. Mm. So, you know, I try to add value in other ways too. And that's something I think that clients with a smaller budget might want to consider, you know, at least offer it. You know, if we're in conversation and my rate is too high for you, you know, maybe
what can you
don't
do
just,
for me?
Don't just offer me, you know, don't just try and ask me for a discount. Like, do you have something else that you can offer value to me as well? Because that might be something that a virtual assistant would consider.
Interesting. Yeah, like in making it more about a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's really important. And we are getting to that time. So we're actually at the time in the interview where I ask you for your last words. And so, I mean, sometimes people know what they want to say is that, like, if they have, like, one more thing to add, like, or, like, they want to say, you're totally welcome to say that. But if you'd like a more pointed question, I'd love to give you one.
Give me the pointed question, Liz. I'm ready.
Yay. Okay. I love asking this. Have you ever made a mistake?
Oh, my gosh. Have I ever made – like, what?
In your business.
You know.
I know. I wanted to give a long pause. Have you ever made a mistake in your business or specifically, like, in a client relationship?
Definitely. When I was a new VA, before I had my client onboarding process in place and I didn't have clearly defined boundaries, I let myself – be at the beck and call of my clients, which was not healthy for me as a person. And it wasn't good for my business because it trained that client to expect that I would do whatever was needed whenever it was needed, night or day. And that's just not a good way to have your business run.
So did you repair the relationship with the client and just restate your boundaries, or did you just kind of have to like cut and run?
There are times I think that you can address it and repair those boundaries and set those boundaries if you haven't clearly defined them. And that is, of course, the first thing I attempted to do. It didn't end up working out. So I did have to, you know, not stop working with them, quite frankly, because it just wasn't working for me. You know, and that's tough to do. It's hard to walk away from some of those clients sometimes, especially if they're a significant portion of your revenue. But you have to remember at the end of the day that you are your most important, you know, asset in your business.
Oh my gosh. Second quote of the day. You are the most important asset in your business. That's really good and important information to remember. So, yeah. So thank you for coming on today. And where can everybody find you online? Tell everybody where they can find you, subscribe to you, buy all your stuff.
Well, my main website, Done by Liz, is at kaylasloan.com. And then my most recently launched course, 10K VA, you can find at 10KVA.com.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. All the links will be in the show notes. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Kayla.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Bye, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to subscribe, listen again later, tell your friends, leave a review, because all of that helps me do all of this. For show notes or more information, check out lizteresa.com/podcast.